Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. Cause when I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything all.
And welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. Tonight is our monthly edition of The Gathering, as you know, the first Thursday of every month. I'm joined by Tom and Melissa Gould. I'm Bob Ginsburg, and we're also joined by Fran Ginsburg.
I thought you were going to leave me out.
And hello, everybody.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
And tonight's topic, we're going to start off with what is a spiritual retreat and what should one expect? We'll be asking things like spirituality. Is it just another term for religion? What would you... Why would you attend a retreat? And we'll get into all sorts of stuff. Tonight's show is sponsored by L&R Productions, and you can find them on the web at lnrproductions.com. And Fran, wanted to give us some announcements before we get going.
We have loads of announcements. First, I want to remind all of our listeners, and I want to thank the ones who have already been participating in the Visa credit card, the iGive, and the Amazon.coms, because it's certainly boosting our income and helping us to pay our bills and to have this radio show. Basically, go to our website, www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Click on the link to apply for the Visa credit card. Every time somebody applies for a card, we get a donation of $50. And every time you use the card without you spending any additional money, we get a donation from Visa. Same goes for iGive.com. Use the link on our website. Go to iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as your charity of choice. Shop in their over 900 stores, fabulous stores like Gap and Best Buy and all the great stores you're used to shopping at. And you don't spend any more money. And again, iGive.com makes a donation to us when you shop. And again, use the link on our website for Amazon.com. And again, everything you buy at Amazon.com, once you enter Amazon from our link, a portion of that spending goes to support the foundation. So please, please, please remember to do that when you shop online. And we thank you in advance for remembering to do that. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing. Because of the glitch we have had with taking credit cards for raffles, we now are taking checks. You can mail your check. It's $5 a chance to Forever Family Foundation at 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. The instructions are also on our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And you can visit there for instructions on purchasing more than just one ticket at $5, because the more tickets you buy, the cheaper it is. And your chances of winning are fabulous because of the reduced participation because of the check situation. Our annual conference is their Chocolate in the Afterlife with a feature Friday night fundraiser. Night of Mediums is set for November 11th and 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in Hauppauge, New York. We have early bird pricing and special group rate hotel rooms, $109 a night, up to four people in a room. So it's certainly well worth the trip. It's a limited seating conference and fundraiser, so book early to avoid disappointment. Again, at the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Holidays Past, an evening of spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, this year in three locations so far. December 3rd, Joanne Gerber will be at Bethel, Connecticut. December 10th, Angelina Diana will be in Natick, Massachusetts with afterlife advocate Dave Keene. And December 17th, Teresa Caputo will be in Melville, New York. It's $25 a seat for members. 35 for non-members reserved now. Seats fill up quickly for that event. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. I'm done, Bob.
I fell asleep. Thank you for that. A lot of good information. You know, I wonder if any of our listeners caught, and I wonder if Tom and Melissa happened to catch last night, there was a prime time special with Bob Woodruff.
Beyond belief.
Talking about near-death experience.
Oh, I heard that every Wednesday they're going to do a feature on that.
Yeah. They do. Some of them are good and some of them are...
I have lots of thoughts on the one last night. It was on near-death experiences. I was eagerly awaiting it, and it was hosted by Bob Woodruff, who was the reporter that was almost killed in Iraq, and you know, and he had a near-death experience himself. So if any of our listeners did see it and they'd like to call in, I'd love to hear what you thought about it. And, of course, the number here is 1-888-627-6008. And I think... as we get into our discussion, we might bring some of that stuff, you know, into it. So when we talk about spiritual retreats, I mean, that's a term that was really foreign to me, I guess not to a lot of people. If you asked me what a spiritual retreat was, you know, a whole bunch of years ago, I don't know if I could give you an answer. I mean, retreat, I could figure out, you know, usually that means getting away, maybe in a remote kind of setting or disassociating from the everyday stress of life, and I guess there are many different types of retreats, but I don't know, spiritual retreat, any thoughts of what that means to you guys?
Well, certainly, as the name suggests, it's a way, and retreat's a good one. As you said before, you get away from, we'll call it the noise of everyday life, and try to clear your mind out, and yeah, it helps to physically get to someplace remote, and then just concentrate on not the mundane, but the spiritual, the energy that we're all tapping into
from within, right?
Right.
Yeah. And Melissa, you.
Well, I wondered when we use the term spiritual retreat, do organized religions use that term, even though, say, it might be a Christian retreat or a Baptist retreat?
Yeah, that's the rub. Absolutely. And if you went to a religious retreat, they would say yes, it's a spiritual retreat, because to many religions, there is no difference between religion and spirituality. And I guess that's one of the things that we'll talk about. When we talk about retreats, I come to mind, I always think of it like the monks or the Buddhists, you know, where you're isolated, you can't talk, you meditate, you know. But now you look, you know, every day you can look in the paper, there are retreats at spas, you know, at inns, you know, health spas and things of that nature. But I think they all are about reflection and meditation, as Tom said, you know, looking within. I guess when you think about it, it's all about changing our focus, right? It's about we want to walk away with a new perspective, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, the retreat we had, the foundation had a retreat, we called it a grief retreat. And that's exactly what we wanted to accomplish. We wanted people that were like-minded to gather together and share. That's part of being in a retreat, right? A new focus, new perspectives, new ways of looking at things. Maybe they came in thinking of death one way, and maybe they left, you know, a different way. That's an unusual, I guess, kind of retreat, you know, a spirit of we certainly wouldn't call that a religious, you know, retreat. But, I mean, Fran, do you find that people commonly intertwine the two terms, religion and spirit?
Too much, because if you consider that you don't have to be aligned with a religion at all and still be a very spiritual person,
right.
And even an atheist can be a very spiritual person. Mm-hmm. Just because they don't believe in a superior being doesn't mean that they're not spiritual doesn't mean that they have an inner connection to the greater good or the bigger world. And I think going back to that show last night, Beyond Belief, there was a woman on there who had had a near-death experience, who was an atheist, and she came across as an extremely spiritual person and didn't have any supreme being. She also still believed after her near-death experience that you came from nothingness and you're returning to nothingness.
So she didn't see what we've often heard.
She did. She did. She experienced the same thing as somebody who was religious, somebody who was not religious. She experienced the same, but her interpretation, because she's an atheist, is, well, that was just my mind taking me on a beautiful dream. And, you know, I'm still going to return to nothing.
Aw.
Yeah, sad.
And also, just because, I mean, granted, I've heard many religions doing retreats, but where I work at the end of August, the administrator's gone on administrative retreat, and believe me, there's nothing spiritual.
Right. Well, yeah, I hear you with that. I've heard it described as the differences between religion and spirituality is that spirituality has an absence of rules. There are no rules, you know. Mm-hmm. Religions have certain rules and doctrines and dogma and you have to abide by them under threat of burning in somewhere.
Or being cast away by their god.
Right. So, I mean, and the rules are meant to give people a direction, you know. Whereas in spirituality, people are pretty much finding, you know, their own direction, you know, without being told, you know, what they should do and what they shouldn't do. I would imagine, you know, all religions at the beginning, one of the reasons they were formed was to alleviate people's fears of death. You know, the flocks were living their life in fear of death, and if you can alleviate it by talking about, you know, an afterlife realm, you know, you can control the flocks. You know, so.
I don't know. I see religion having formed out of the recognition of group prayer, that group prayer does accomplish something. So, hey, let's all meet on Sunday mornings and let's accomplish together. And that was how religions developed. It was like, let's get all that energy together in one place at the same time.
I agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, primarily the religions were started by highly spiritual philosophy. I mean, if you read the words of Jesus, if you read the words of Muhammad and the words of Moses, they're all pretty much on the same page,
right?
As to, you know, the eternal life and to the energy that flows through us and within us, and it's only because of people who saw it as an opportunity to control that they started putting their own rules and regulations, and then, you know, telling people what they can do and what they can't do, and then that's where all of, you know, the problems with organized religion have developed from.
Right.
And I think one of the things, I know we have to go to a break, but the one of the things people always associate an afterlife with religion, and even in that show last night, who were they interviewing? A pastor, a nurse who had deep religious convictions, somebody that was praying at the site of the accident of the pastor. And then even, as Fran mentioned, when they bring on, by the way, they bring on an atheist minister. Would you please explain to me?
Yeah, that would be a hard time with that. So what is she preaching?
But even then, you know,
it's a lot of time lost.
Spirituality.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That was the show's attempt, I guess, to balance it out.
No, I don't think it is. I got to go back because we've been watching this show almost every Wednesday night since it first started at the beginning of the summer. And no matter what topic is out there, it's always taken back to religion. So whoever the producers are, whoever the writers are for this show, those people are religiously oriented, and they don't recognize anything outside of that.
Yeah, well, we can certainly.
But, I mean, you cannot deny, especially if you're a programmer, the bulk of your audience are of some faith and persuasion, and a huge bulk of America is very strongly that way. So if, as a producer of the show, you want to bring new ideas in, you can't ignore that, those people. And,
yeah,
and
but
you placate them a little bit.
A little bit, but they're eliminating a whole segment, which is the pure spiritual segment.
Mm.
You know, so it is.
Don't forget the scientific segment.
Right, that's true, that too. So it is, A, skewered,
yeah.
and B, it's not good journalism.
Yeah, they did have two doctors on, but again, like Dr. Andrew Newberg, who we're all familiar with, who studies, you know, a neurosurgeon, they were asking him about his studies, his brain studies, but only in terms of who did he have. He had a very religious person versus a non-religious person. So that came back to religion again.
That's who they provided him with,
right,
for the TV show. But he's studied all kinds because he's open-minded and he's willing to accept whatever is.
Yeah. Well, let's go to our break. We come back. We'll continue. We'll take some calls. And so stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. LNR Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
The Forever Family Foundation will be hosting its much-sought-after annual fundraising event, Night of Mediums, on 11-11-11 at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York at 7 p.m. Enjoy a scrumptious dinner while seated at a table of only 12 people as a Foundation-certified medium joins you following dessert to conduct spirit communication for your table only. It's a terrific opportunity to not only get readings in an intimate setting, but to enjoy a good meal and help the Foundation at the same time. For reservations and information, call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707. Or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to Signs of Life. The number here is 1-888-627-6008 if you'd like to join in the discussion. We're talking about retreats, what is a spiritual retreat and what should one expect in attending one. When we talk about retreats, why would, you know, the question might come, why go to a retreat? I could just do this on my own, which I guess you could, you know, but there's something about the combined energy and being with like-minded people.
Right, particularly the spiritual retreats where you exactly, you combine your energy and the experience is heightened. I recently went to a weekend of morning deep meditation, and of course you go home with materials and guided CDs for guided meditation, but the experience that you get in the room when you're with a group of people is definitely more than you get initially at home. Of course, you know, if you practice it enough, I'm sure your experience by yourself can be as rewarding. But it's a great way to, first of all, to break down some inhibitions as far as, you know, if you do have deep-seated beliefs that society has put on you, and to get validation from other people that it's okay to go down this road, and that other people feel that it's very beneficial, and then you speak to people who have gotten great benefits, then that helps in the experience as well.
Yeah. Well, a lot of, you know, we were talking about religion before. I mean, that's one of the basis of a lot of religions, is that it's the community and the group interaction, right? So I think both spiritualists and, you know, people that are devoted to religion have common needs in that respect. I think we all have a natural inclination to be with other people and to share with other people and to help other people. You know, we weren't designed, so to speak, to go solo. You know? So when Fran mentioned, we were talking about retreats before, oh, don't forget, what was his name?
Jim Jones.
Jim Jones.
And the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, now that...
That was a special retreat.
That was a cult.
That was how many years ago? Was that in the 70s?
Like 30 years ago?
Yeah, easily.
40 years ago?
Easily, yeah.
And they were gathered just for this man's wisdom, or was it a specific religion?
Yeah, I don't know what it was that got people there, but he apparently was a dynamic speaker and inspired a lot of people. Of course, I don't think they knew exactly that the Kool-Aid was poisoned. I think that was his idea. Granted, when people started getting sick and then they started getting corralled by gunpoint, it became a whole different thing. But initially, it was a group of people going, Central America somewhere, and for a retreat, and turned into something.
There was another one like that in the late 90s, The Gates of Heaven.
Yes, and now those people, similar ending, but they were all volunteering themselves to do this. That one, I remember, was a cult leader who said that there was a spaceship that was heading our way, and at a certain time when all the stars were aligned, the people would go into basically a bunkhouse and all simultaneously take the poison, and then when their spirit left their body, it would be picked up by the spaceship going by. That was the belief.
And those were
voluntary suicides there.
I think that, you know, how these people, these leaders of these cults are successful, so to speak, is because they get people to give up their identity. Mm-hmm. You know, they're told what to do and all the steps are laid out. And many might disagree, but I see that certainly not with all, you know, religions, but in some extremist kinds of situations in these zealots that follow certain religions, I mean, every step is laid out for them. They're, you know, you do this, you do that, you do this, you pray then, you say this prayer, you don't say that prayer, and you tend to lose your identity when you lose your identity, you use your own ability to explore, you know, and I think our own self-exploration is what it's all about. I mean, you guys are doing everything you can. You just came back from the meditation, you know. I mean, nobody's
These are all part of finding your own. Why do you go? What's your motivation? Let me ask you that.
Well, a lot of the talk that we've had, and certainly the dealings we've had with mediums, and pretty much all the reading, it all seemed to go back to meditation. That your best way to. I read a book on lucid dreaming, and they talked about, well, you have to do this meditation first. And we went to a program with Angelina about the contacting spirit, and she says, well, you have to get to it through meditation.
Right.
So the remote viewing starts off with, we got to do a meditation. So I wanted to immerse myself in a weekend of thinking of nothing else and actually... signed up with an Indian yogi master, and figured I'd go to the source, because it was the Indian culture that developed meditation. Well, that's hard to believe, but that it was one place. But I guess it has to start somewhere. But anyway, it's largely been accepted that the art of meditation came from the air of Southeast Asia,
right.
And I found it. It was fantastic, actually. I learned about meditation in a way I'd never learned before. And
my point, not to interrupt you, but to follow up on that, you did the logical thing. I mean, everything pointed in that direction. That's the common denominator. You looked at it logically, right. And that is the common denominator. But your ultimate goal in going, I assume, would be to facilitate connections, you know, that you may get fleetingly now, or increase the probability, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was particularly interested in, actually, since the retreat that we went up in Connecticut with the Forever Family Foundation, Rita Dwyer did a fantastic seminar on dreams and the power of dream and all that sort of thing, and it came up in the conversation about lucid dreaming, and I'd had some experience with that in the past, and I wanted to know more about going down that road, and I felt that this would be a good way to facilitate that, and indeed it has. I've had five or six lucid dreams within the last 2 months.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely a key. My goal is... to get into a lucid dream and then to find my connection that way.
Yeah.
Connect the lucid dream with the dream visitation, that, okay, if I can get into a dream and I know I can visit my loved ones in a dream, if I can get into a dream and know I'm in a dream, then my goal is to find the loved one and then have a conversation on which I'm aware of it as it's going on.
Yeah.
I've got a ways to go for that because, and maybe for another show we can talk about how it's done, but I find that once I'm in a lucid dream and I realize it's a lucid dream, that I get too worked up or excited, I don't know if that's the right word, but to a point where it wakes me up.
Right.
That now that I know, oh, I'm in a dream, this is exciting. Oh, wait, now I'm waking up.
Yeah. And we have these lucid dreams, and then afterwards, you know, we reflect upon it and say, why didn't I ask this? You know, I could have found out the answer.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're practicing for that. And you, in a sense, you know, you're practicing for the afterlife, you know, when you think about it. You know, I mean, that's probably what these other worlds are. So, I mean, you may be better off than some and better prepared. Melissa, you were going to say?
Well, I was thinking about Tom's experience, and when we were at the retreat, being a part of this group workshop on the meditation provided the opportunity for the yogi master to then ask people by a show of hands, who else, along the way, questions were asked about what you experienced at every step of the way, and people would voluntarily get up and speak about it, and then it was presented to the group, how many of you experienced something like this. And at first, I thought, well, this is just to feed the guy's ego, like, look how good I am. But it wasn't. It was to say, see, you're not the only one. This is, you know, this is something that you've all shared, not the point that, oh, I shared it with him and I with her, but other people are experiencing similar things. So with Tom's discussion of lucid dreaming, he could say, Bob, have you had lucid dreams? What was it like? Or ask some random other people. But here was an opportunity for a whole group of people to relate to the experiences and comment on it. And it was pretty cool, like, to be able to say, that's just what happened to me. Mm-hmm. And that was beneficial.
Right. So you would term that as a spiritual retreat. The focus was on meditation, but
yes.
It certainly sounds to me like it's a spiritual
mm-hmm.
retreat.
Yeah.
I assume there were no distractions, like no phones, no cell phones,
right.
That kind of stuff.
Right.
No
yeah.
TVs.
Right. That's right. And I have a feeling, I can't remember specifically, but when the whole discussion began with the meditation and the things that would unfold, I do recall somebody in the group grappling with the aspect of God. And so it sounded like this person couldn't separate the religion from this spiritual experience. And I'm not sure, I tried to, you know, sort of look for that person and see, how are they relating to all this now as the weekend went on?
Yeah.
But they were vocal about it.
Right. Well, that's the thing with when I was watching that show last night, we all know from our, you know, discussions with these researchers of near-death experiences that people tend to, when they try to put these ideas together, you know, that are indescribable, what they experience into words, they filter them with their own beliefs. So, you know, many people, you know, some people will see this, you know, this warm, glowing light, and they'll say, well, you know, that was clearly God. Or somebody else might say, you know, well, that's, you know, clearly, you know, Buddha. Or somebody say, well, you know, I saw Muhammad, or I saw Jesus, you know, so everybody is probably seeing that same warm, glowing light, but you know their interpretation is based upon what they know. You know, so I don't think that you know the people seemed adamant. You know, and sure, in what they saw, they weren't, you know, lying. But you know, but I think that there were, what that show could have done is they could have shown the other commonalities, people, you know, floating above their bodies, people seeing the deceased relatives. They mentioned a little bit about that, but in the religious sense, the heightened sensations, the tunnel, you know, experience, and then all these things, you know, that we learned about. They did had one snippet of Dr. Sam Parnia at the end, and he, when they said to him, well, what about all these things, these claims that his dreams are hallucinations, he said, well, you can't, from what we know of the brain, you can't have a dream when you have no brain function. You know,
or a hallucination.
Or a hallucination. So that kind of, you know, and like, I wish they would.
They
know,
wait till the end.
Yeah, I mean,
throw that in.
It could have gone, you know. My point is that, you know, we're all conditioned to immediately when you say to somebody afterlife, they don't think in terms of science, and they don't think in terms of another realm, and they don't think in terms of different spheres. They think of heaven, you know, they think of heaven in a purely religious sense. And you know, who knows? You know, maybe that's the way I would describe it when I get there. But you know,
I just wanted to point out that in the normal course of growing up and going to school, unless you have studied physics or sciences that talk about other dimensions, you don't even have an inkling that there are other dimensions. All you know is what you've learned from the people around you, from
right.
your family, from your places of worship, if there are any. And so your whole orientation is towards that. So if you're going to experience something that's out of the norm, you're immediately going to put the tag on it that fits in with what you've been exposed to.
Right. Well, and even in the show, you know, last night they interviewed a child. When now he was older.
It's only like maybe 11 now.
Yeah. But, of course, he grew up in a religious household, you know.
Extremely religious household.
So he, and you know, saw also that, you know, that source, you know, and said, naturally he said he saw, God.
That was an interesting conversation because they had him seated with his parents, who are extremely religious and who have raised this child. And so the interviewer is asking him, do you think you saw God? Is the kid going to say no? and even if he was going to say no, and the question was, then what was it that you saw? He would have no explanation for it.
It's as good a term as any.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what about, we know that a lot of people, and certainly not all, that have these near-death experiences, they reach that point, that crossroads, you know, and we only know about the ones that come back. So they're sent back, and they're told to come back. Now, sometimes we hear reports that, like deceased relatives that they meet over there tell them, it's not, you know, mom tells me, or Uncle Harry, or some, you know. All the people interviewed in this show, they came to that gate, they termed it as a gate, and God was there, you know, and God told them, you know. So, you know, that would be the concept. You know, I don't think that there's any particular one God that visits the billions and billions of souls to, you know, to send them back. You
like
know,
Santa at the mall.
Yeah, you know, but that's
saw him too.
That's the impression that you might get from a show like that. But doesn't it make sense to you that you know if you do see your deceased relatives in this other realm, that those are the ones that you'd feel the most comfortable with, even before. A divine, being, because you can't relate to the divine being, but you can relate to your loved one, you know.
Well, I'm picturing this divine being being the ultimate feeling of love, not it being a being at all, but...
Yeah, not some...
Right, and then they didn't get into that, you know, did you sense love? They didn't get into that, and particularly with this little kid, you know. Mm. Well, what did this divine being look like? Well, he was big.
He was
sitting in a big chair, and he was big. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, what pictures did this kid see growing up?
Right, and then, of course, they'll appear to you the way you expect them to appear.
Absolutely.
So that you don't get frightened. An all-powerful being could be pretty frightening if you're a little human. They could be squashed very easily. And it's all about making you feel comfortable as you go there.
And the sense of oneness. I think that's something when you do talk to near-death experiencers all together in a room or even if you're just compiling information, they come back, their life has changed, but they all agree that there was a sense of being at one with whatever it was that they encountered on the other side.
And that's ultimately the key to where my spiritual belief comes from, is that you are part of the great energy of the universe.
Yeah. I was reading this book by Michael Tim, and he'll be on the show, I think, in 2 weeks or maybe something like that. But he wrote a book called The Afterlife Revealed, and he's got the whole book is filled of reports from the great mediums and some of the scientific minds that passed over and communicated through these mediums. But he had an interesting perspective on religion, which I didn't think about. He said, like, in his particular religion, you know, the people had this tremendous fear, you know, that they were going to be damned to this eternal hellish nightmare, or they're going to be stuck in this limbo of nebulous whatever, you know, for almost an eternity. He says, and that's one thing. But then he also says, what about the other? You know, he talks about his parents, you know, that when they contemplate, they're all to contemplate, when they were contemplating their death, they didn't find much comfort in having an existence where you sat around in robes on clouds and played harps and angels. That wasn't much of an existence with nothing for them to look forward to either. So that was kind of boring, to him. And, of course, his point was that the
most of the evidence, as far as he's concerned, is that there are many different spheres and levels, and we migrate to people according to shared, you know, interest and development and things like that. But I guess I would agree with that perspective. I never really thought of it in those terms.
That's,
you know, sometimes we fear boredom as much as.
Oh, I was just going to point out that Michael Tim will be on August 11th.
August 11th.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
8/11/11.
Okay.
And you know, the messages that I've gotten through mediums from my dad. He says it is so much fun. It's beautiful, and everything goes at the speed of an airplane. That you just constantly zoom, 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 and he says it's great. So that's the word I've gotten so far.
Well, I guess the question is, you know, it may not be the same level of great initially for everybody. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's how we think of the terms of people that are depraved and do a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe it takes them a while to get to that. They do get there eventually, but
and I suspect Tom's dad maybe led a purer life than you have.
Than me personally.
Well, you
won't get into that.
You better start toning if you want to be dad real quick.
Well, I'll tell you. Interestingly enough, on the topic of spiritual retreats, just in the last couple of weeks, as I've mentioned a couple of times in the air, I'm a musician. I have a band, and my band was just invited to play the Light and Love Festival.
Well.
Which will be held on October 25th through 29th, 2012, in Cusco, Peru, in the Andes Mountains, the capital of where the Incas were, and it's
road trip.
It's billed as the largest spiritual congregation, or what did they say, spiritual gathering. I forget that word, in mankind history.
Okay, and that's the Bossa Nova Beatniks.
That's right. We are now officially on the bill.
And check them out on Facebook.
We have until next May to actually commit as far as, but I am in the process of finding out if this is a doable thing, because it just seems, well, first of all, I mean, as we've been talking earlier in the show about Melissa and I on a spiritual journey, and then we made a big leap, I think, in our spiritual journey with our learning the quantum breath meditation, and then to come back from that and be invited to the spiritual gathering to play it. It's supposed to be hundreds of thousands of people showing up.
Wow.
So it's,
you know, you are going to be in the land of shamans, so I wonder if there's going to be any ayahuasca.
They'll all be one.
That's an area I always wanted to visit, the Mayan ruins and in Peru. It's on my to-do list. So if you might have some company. Hey, it's time we'll take a break, Fran, and so we're going to be back in a few minutes. So stay with us, and I'll see you around the hill.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. LNR Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Is there chocolate in the afterlife? Don't miss the 5th Annual Forever Family Foundations Conference on Saturday, November 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York. This all-day conference features presentations by medical doctor Lee Bounum, offering scientific evidence of an afterlife, and paranormal evidence by noted parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. A full sit-down luncheon will be highlighted by a formal chocolate tasting, and guests will be treated to two sessions of spirit communication conducted by certified mediums Angelina Diana and Teresa Caputo. Call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707, or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back, Signs of Life Radio. This is The Gathering. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. You know, before we went to break, we were joking a little bit with Tom about atoning for his sins so he could make sure that he'd be with his dad when he, you know. and we were kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's a serious subject. I mean, we mentioned people maybe not being at the same sphere or the same dimension when they first cross over, depending on the way that they live their lives. So do you think, I know in a religious sense, you know, a lot of religions will say, well, it doesn't matter, you know, what if you did rape and pillaging, you know, as long as you do this and do this and do this, you know, God will, you know, take you back. So do you think that we can atone for sins while we're here, or do you think that atonement takes place only on when we leave here?
Well, that's what I've often wondered. And when they talk about the Akashic Records, which are supposedly every detail of your life that ever happened, and I would hope people could turn things around, and if they realize they treated somebody poorly, you know, reverse that and start living a better life, and you know, certainly make up to individuals. But I wondered if and of course we're speculating, but if everything's transferred in thoughts when we're pure energy, how far back do those thoughts go? Like when we reach the other side, the other dimension, and we're beings of thought and we're meeting up with our predeceased beings of pure thought, what do they remember us the way we'd been on the earth? They're seeing how we changed. They're remembering what we did way back when to them, even though we may have changed, they still remember, you know, they're not holding a grudge, but there's a memory of it. And I know there's no judgment, or at least I hope there's no judgment, and it's only us reviewing
right.
our life events that, with no judgment except our own. But I just wonder how much you can turn yourself around. And
sounds like that we all need access to these Akashic records beforehand.
Yes.
I think this is on to something, but if we go back to Tom's original comment about all of the similarities of all the different religions and where they came from, I think you might find your answer there. I mean, almost all the key religions have this atonement thing built in. Some have it every week. Some have it once a year. But it's going back the year before, or going back the week before, looking at the things that you may have done wrong to somebody else and fixing them. Some religions say, okay, just stand in this box and confess them all and you're good to go for another week. Some of them say you actually have to find the person that you've wronged and go up to them and make it good. But whatever it is, that's the physical interpretation, the religious rule. Now, again, we're going back to those rules that keep you in line, that keep you coming back to that temple to worship, because they've given you the rules that allow you to continue your everyday life and still do bad things, but they'll be able to go back and fix them. But I think in the pure spiritual thing, particularly if you look at NDEers, we keep going back to them and their experiences. When they come back after that experience, they have a new view on life. If you ask them where it came from, they can't describe it. They just have a different way about them, and it is a very positive. They couldn't think of doing terrible things to other people, and shouldn't that be our example of what we need to do in order for Tom to be with his dad? It's not going back and changing what you did. It's starting a whole new leaf and saying, okay, this is who I am and this is who I'm going to be from now on, and I don't need to, you know, wait a year to say I'm sorry or wait a week to tell somebody else what I did wrong. I'm responsible for myself.
And then Bob's question before is, can you do that while you're here and not have to wait till you get to the other side to make atonement? I believe you can, because we hold, it's us here that hold so much value to birth and death, when in the long run they're just blips in your whole existence, which is eternal. So it's whenever your energy decides to, you know what, I'm gonna get my energy in line, I'm gonna make my energy positive, that's when it matters. And if you do it right now while you're in physical, all the better.
I agree with you, Melissa, that I'm pretty sure that it is all self-judgment. And I have to tell you, that troubles me. You know, that's what I think about sometimes, because I have a tendency to be a little too self-critical. And I know, to me, that's the most painful thing, I would imagine. You know, I could handle somebody else saying something, you know, but seeing it and feeling, you know, the hurt, you know, I mean, let's face it, we're not all sane, so to speak, you know, so there's a lot of stuff that we've done that have overall, I think everybody has, that have hurt people willingly and unwillingly. Now, supposedly the unwilling stuff, you know, maybe you're not as critical as the willing stuff, but sometimes when I'm contemplating an action to take, I'll think about that. You know, if that time comes when I'm doing this life review, how am I going to feel about this?
Yeah.
You know? And we just start to think. Your other question, though, is interesting about memory. You know, I mean, and some people, I mean, the whole point, I mean, if we believe that the mediums are doing what they're doing, then certainly people in spirit have to retain personality and memory. I mean, we have evidence of that, you know, every day. The question is how far back. I mean, some people describe from the other side, you know, having partial memory, maybe not so good on specific names and dates, but good on theories and emotions and personality things. So it's easier to communicate a certain type of personality than maybe Harry, you know. So but then it goes back even further. You say, well, how, you know, what about our loved ones on the other side? Do they have
all of their memories and then all of the memories of you from the physical. And what about past lives? You know, do you have all the memories of all your past lives too? I mean, you were, you know, a different person. And then you get into this concept of with many of the many different souls, you know, that fragment and so, you know, and then how do you differentiate? I remember this, you know, as Bob from 2000, you know, so to speak, but not from King Henry VIII, you know, from, you know, 1,000 years ago. So it's, it's mind-boggling, so to
speak. I think it's one of those mirrored fun houses, and I think your upstairs bathroom to some extent with the mirrors, and you see multiples and multiples and multiples of yourself. And can you imagine if that there are many?
Deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
And you can never stop seeing. Right, if you keep looking.
And then you get back to, we often make reference to the Seth's works. And he says, look, you know, I'm going to try to explain this to you, but if I really explained it to you, your human brain could not possibly understand it. And that's what we're grappling with here as being humans, that we're trying to understand the universe with brains that are only meant to hunt and pillage and that sort of thing.
Right, and maybe that's where the whole religion concept comes in of it's not for you to know.
Yeah.
Trust us, it's not for you to know.
It could be as simple as if there are these Akashic records, right, and we've already kind of established that, well, we haven't established anything, but we speculated that the memory is not stored in the brain because, you know, we function without our brains. Our minds can function separately from our brains, so that maybe we're thinking in terms of memories with brains, but we don't have brains on the other side, so maybe all the memories are stored in this grid, this Akashic Records, this field. And every time we want to extract something, it's just as simple as extracting it by thought, you know. So we don't have to, we're not computers and brains on the other side. We're part of fields and fields of memory. So that makes sense to me. So don't worry, you don't have to remember everything. Nobody's going to test you.
I don't think you need tests on the other side. You just say, okay, access this, done, finished.
I think portends well for Tom. Most people say that most of what goes on the other side is obviously not physical activity, because if you were interested in sports, maybe you're not going to have such a good time, but music and art.
Yeah.
So true. You know, so I'm jealous already, Tom.
He's all set.
I may start to learn an instrument. Not a harp.
Well, we can just kind of sway along to Tom's music. Okay.
Well, we'll be your band of angels.
Well, we better go around the same time as Tom, so at least we have some entertainment.
Well, like I have a batch of Kool-Aid today.
Is it cherry? Say it's a cherry.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, is it time for your prayer to the Gulf or for people that are right?
I would love to ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lockman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, and all the victims of the Japan tsunami.
And I'd like to add Mick Hargreaves to that.
Oh, Mick Hargreaves. Okay. And we also have our prayer for the Gulf. Now let us give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masuro Emoto back on May 9th, 2010 with our Gulf tragedy. And now it's time for us all to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
That sounds like a cult to me. Night, everyone.